Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for Monday, June the 15th, 2020. This is Air Force veteran David Corey, along with my co-host Richard Hurley. Thank you for joining us this evening. I hope you're all doing well and staying safe and healthy. Now, before going to news tonight, let's first go over to Richard Hurley. Hello, Richard. How's it going?
Hey, David. Everything's going pretty well. And I want to hope everybody out there is doing well, especially with the COVID-19 reaching another day, and I'm not sure where our listeners are listening from, but if you're in Florida, you know that we've had some spiking going on here in Texas, California. So you got to be careful out there, people. You got to be careful and got to wear your mask. It's very serious. Got to wear your mask so that you can protect yourself from other people and vice versa. You don't want to spread this thing around. And the more people that wear masks, I think, the better off we'll all be. Tonight we were going to have a special guest from PTSD Heroes. It's an organization that tries to promote their PTSD organization through golf. Yes, the game of golf. And I was really looking forward to having one of their representatives on our show tonight. Unfortunately, he had to get approval. It's a nonprofit organization, and a lot of nonprofits want to approve people appearing on radio shows and being out there in the news. So we'll look forward to him in the next couple of weeks once he gets his approval. In the meantime, you're going to have to deal with David and I tonight. We do have an interesting show for you. But this will also give you veterans an opportunity to call in. You know, every week I ask you, call in the show. You know, that number is 1-888-627-6008. And this is a great opportunity for you to call in and tell us what's going on in your world dealing with the VA. You know, every day, and David, I know you get the same thing. You get phone calls from different veterans who have been so frustrated in getting their disability compensation payments or disability compensation claims from the VA. And I hear all sorts of stories about how the VA says, oh, you're not eligible and you make too much money or you're this, you're that. All these different roadblocks that they put in front of these veterans who then just shut down, you know. So many of you veterans, I was talking to a veteran today who he clearly has PTSD and anxiety and depression as a result of his service. And the VA just told him, well, you're not eligible. And so he turned around and walked away. You know, I said, why'd you walk away? He said, well, you know, it's the VA. It's an extension of the military as far as I'm concerned. So they told me I'm not eligible, and I take it for what it's worth. And that's the end of it. And doesn't go out and seek advice from an attorney or advice from somebody else, and he just lets it go. And here he is now in his mid-50s, and all of a sudden he realizes he's had a claim all along, ever since he separated from the Marines. So, you know, veterans, you got to be wise. You got to start out by being your best advocate first, and then get the and really push it and go out there and find the lawyers who are willing to put in the time and talk to you. And I, you know, David and I do this all the time. You know, our consultations are free. Just pick up the phone and call us. At the end of the show, we'll give you our phone numbers and our email addresses. And all you got to do is call us and discuss your case. Let us let you know whether or not you have a case or not. We're not always right, but we're advocates. And we will push you at least into thinking, you know, that you got to consider it. You know, David and I talk about the burden of proof here. The benefit of the doubt rule. The benefit of the doubt rule. Not beyond a reasonable doubt. Not preponderance of the evidence. The benefit of the doubt, meaning 50-50. To use a baseball analogy, tie goes to the runner. If it's a tie, you win your case. That's an extremely low threshold, and it's not, I'm not going to say it's easy to meet, but it certainly is doable in many, many, and I would say most cases. So be your advocate. Do what you got to do. Pick up the phone. Get the right advice. And remember, call in tonight. You know, David and I would love to hear from you, and we'd love to. We'll give you some free consultation over the phone tonight. All you got to do is call this number at 1-888-627-6008. Again, that's 1-888-627-6008, and discuss your case with us. All right, David, back to you, and give us some interesting news about what's going on in the VA.
Will do. Just before getting into the news, I want to publicize our guest next week. It's going to be Mike Hogan, who's from the organization Pause for Purple Hearts, and they have an easy-to-remember website, which is pauseforpurplehearts.org. As you might have inferred from that title, it's an organization that provides service dogs to veterans who are suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. And it's a great organization because it provides these very trained dogs to veterans that need them for free, unlike some organizations which may charge thousands of dollars to provide a service dog to a veteran. This organization called Pause for Purple Hearts trains and provides these service dogs to the veterans for free. And these dogs are trained, and they provide emotional support. They provide sort of interaction that is really helpful to veterans suffering from post-traumatic stress. They're trained to do things as well as just be there. They're trained to do things like opening doors, retrieving dropped items, turning off and on lights, pulling wheelchairs, coordinating, sort of managing, helping the veteran maneuver through crowds, and certainly helping the veteran deal with and recognizing different emotional states that the veteran may be in. So, it's a fascinating program that they have, and our guest next week will be talking about the program. And if you're interested in the meantime, go to their website, pauseforpurplehearts.org. And it's basically an organization run and supported by veterans who are trying to help other veterans. We got lots of news from the VA. We certainly welcome your calls, though. As Richard said, our call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. Again, 1-888-627-6008. Now, we've been going through as a country this COVID-19 pandemic for several months now, and it's had an effect certainly on many people, lives, families, and society at large. In the VA world, one of many effects has been on how health care is actually provided in the VA. Like many organizations, the VA had really scaled back on in-person visits unless absolutely necessary. And there was a big movement towards the use of telephone and televideo meetings between patients and doctors or other providers. The VA announced in a press release this past Thursday, June the 11th, that these so-called telehealth video appointments using a program called VA Video Connect increased from about 10,000 a week to 120,000 a week between February and May of this year. So that's just an incredible spike upwards from 10,000 a week to 120,000 of these video and telephone appointments per week. And it's basically a result to the VA and its providers and veterans taking precautions, social distancing, if you will, because of this COVID-19. What this VA Video Connect is, it basically allows veterans and their caregivers to meet virtually with the VA care teams on any computer, tablet, or mobile device, but also a telephone. It's one of the largest and most successful digital health platforms in the country, and it currently enables more than 25,000 virtual appointments every day. The VA is taking strides to bridge the digital divide for veterans who lack the technology or broadband internet connectivity to participate. More than 26,000 cellular-enabled tablets are currently distributed to veterans across the country. Major wireless carriers, T-Mobile, Sprint, TracFone, and Verizon are allowing veterans to access VA telehealth services without incurring data charges, which is a good thing. Now, due to the increased demand during the COVID-19 pandemic, the VA is rapidly expanding VA Video Connect, allowing more veterans and VA care teams to connect by video. Veterans using Video Connect with limited data plans could temporarily experience data charges, but as I say, while cellular carriers are taking measures to support veterans during this period of expansion, veterans with concerns about this are encouraged to contact their carrier. If you want more information about this VA telehealth services, there is a website. It's connectedcare.va.gov. Again, the website for the VA's telehealth services is connectedcare.va.gov. Again, if you have any questions for us, our toll-free number here tonight, Veterans News Hour, is 1-888-627-6008. Now, we have more news of interest to veterans, and this next story, and I'm going to also turn it over to Rick Hurley.
Yeah, I want to comment on our last story there, David. I want to just put a caveat out there to you veterans who may get these calls for these types of examinations. Before you agree to it, you should pick up the phone and call your representative, especially if you have an attorney, and discuss it with your attorney first, because you don't have to accept that type of examination from the VA. You can just say, look,
well, Rick, you're referring to the disability claims as opposed to the broader for medical care treatment, like if you have an appointment with the VA for health care.
That's correct.
Yeah. I just wanted to clarify that. What you're talking about are claims, compensation, and pen exams.
Right. And the reason I bring that up is some veterans that I'm talking to are confused by the whole process. So, even on if you've got a claim pending, I still think you should, just get some advice on it anyway. We got some more news from the National Veterans Legal Services Program website, nvlsp.org. The issue involves veterans who were entitled to VA health care but who faced a situation where they had to seek emergency care in private hospitals, who then sought reimbursement from the VA, which they then refused to pay. This is a very common problem for you veterans. In 2018, two veterans who filed VA claims for reimbursement of their emergency medical expenses, Amanda Wolf and Peter Boschinger, filed a class action lawsuit against the Department of Veteran Affairs. The lawsuit was filed in the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims and is known as Wolf versus Wilkie. The two veterans were represented in the Wolf lawsuit by the National Veterans Legal Services Program in Sydney, Austin, at no cost to the veterans. NVLSP is a nonprofit veteran service organization founded in 1981 that has forced the VA over the last decade to pay billions of dollars in VA disability and health care benefits to more than 100,000 veterans and their survivors. Sidley Austin is a private law firm with many lawyers who spend part of their time representing veterans for free. The two veterans who filed the Wolf lawsuit had been receiving their health care at the VA, but then experienced a medical emergency that required them to go to a non-VA hospital for treatment. They incurred thousands of dollars in emergency medical expenses at the non-VA facility. They both had private health care insurance, like Medicare or employee-based health care, that paid part but not all of their emergency medical expenses. They applied to the VA for reimbursement of the part of the emergency medical expenses that was not covered by their private health care insurance. The VA denied these reimbursed claims for the same reason. The VA said that they could not reimburse veterans for the co-payments, deductibles, and co-insurance payments they owed under their private health care insurance policy. The NVLSP believed that although VA could legally deny reimbursement for co-payments, it was against the law for VA to refuse to reimburse veterans for deductibles and co-insurance payments they owed under their private health care insurance. NVLSP also knew that the VA had denied reimbursement to many other veterans for their deductibles and coinsurance. So in an effort to force the VA to reimburse all of these veterans for their deductible and coinsurance payments, the NVLSP filed a class action lawsuit with Amanda Wolf as the lead representative of the class. How can you tell whether you are a member of the class in the Wolf case? On September 9, 2019, the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims certified the Wolf versus Wilkie case as a class action so that its ruling would affect all veterans who fit within the court's definition of the class. The court defined the class as all veterans who had, one, filed a claim for reimbursement of emergency medical expenses at non-VA facilities, and two, received VA correspondence stating that VA denied the reimbursement claim for coinsurance and deductible amounts owed under the Veterans Health Care Insurance Plan. This means that you are a member of the Wolf class if you have ever received VA correspondence stating that VA denied your reimbursement claim for coinsurance and deductible amounts you owed under your health insurance plan. David, what did the court decide in the Wolf case, and how does it affect you, affect veterans?
Well, that's a good question. Last September of 2019, the court in the Wolf case ruled that federal law called the Emergency Care Fairness Act of 2010 prohibits the VA from denying reimbursement for deductibles and coinsurance that veterans owed under their health insurance policy for emergency medical expenses incurred at a non-VA, in other words, a private medical facility. So this means, by the court's decision, that if the VA denied some or all of a veteran's claim because they were deductibles or coinsurance under a private insurance policy, the VA must re-decide that reimbursement claim. The court also ordered the VA to identify all veterans who meet the definition of the class covered in the Wolf case and to notify each of them about the court's decision and the VA, and that the VA will reimburse their re-decide their reimbursement claim. Now, as a result, the VA has now identified nearly 72,000 veterans, which shows you why it was important to have this class action lawsuit instead of making these veterans fight individually. But the VA has identified nearly 72,000 veterans who meet the definition of the class covered by the Wolf case. And the VA gave the National Veterans Legal Services Program a list of those veterans. The VA began mailing notices to those veterans starting on May 11th, but that mailing period is extending to August the 3rd. So some veterans in this group of 72,000 veterans may not have received their notice yet, and they may not until August. What this notice from the VA will tell the veteran is that he or she is a member of the class in the Wolf court decision. Also, that the VA will re-decide the veteran's claim and issue a new decision, and that there is no action the veteran needs to take. This means that if the veteran has already received this notice, that confirms that the veteran is a member of the class. It also means that some of the veterans who are members of this class will not receive this VA notice until August of 2020. Now, another question people may have is there a cost involved to be part of the class action? The answer is no. There's no cost to the veterans. The National Veterans Legal Services Program never charges veterans a legal fee, for its work on their case. It's truly an outstanding organization, and on many levels, because they're involved in a lot of class action lawsuits. They're also the producer, the editors, publishers of the famous Veterans Manual, which is basically the best single volume, most comprehensive book on VA benefits. Rick, I understand that there are other questions, like when will the VA re-decide a veteran's reimbursement claim under this?
Another great question. Although the VA must re-decide the reimbursement claims of all members of the class in the Wolf case, the court did not provide a deadline by which the VA must complete making all these new decisions. Not surprised by that. The court did order the VA to begin the process of re-deciding the 72,000 claims on May 28, 2020, but the precise timing of when your claim will come up for a new decision is currently unknown. This kind of reminds me of when the BVA remands a case back to the VA for, quote-unquote, further processing. Those of you out there who have remand cases, you know that you've probably been waiting years, not months, but years, for the VA to finally do what the BVA has ordered them to do, which is to continue processing your claim. And as far as whom you should contact if you have any questions about your VA reimbursement claim, if you are a member of the class, as David pointed out, and have questions about the case, you can submit your questions to NVLSP by using the Wolf Class Member Form. That on the NVLSP website at nvlsp.org/wolf-class-member. Again, nvlsp.org/wolf-class-member. You can also use this form if you have not yet received the VA letter notifying you that you are a member of the class and you want NVLSP to confirm your belief that you are a member of the class. If you are not a member of the class in the Wolf case but have questions about a reimbursement claim, you have filed for emergency medical expenses, we recommend that you call the telephone number established by the VA to answer questions from veterans about their reimbursement claims at 1-877-466-7124. Or, in the alternative, give David or myself a call, and we'd be happy to discuss that with you. Hey, David, how about some more news out there?
Yep, there's plenty of information this week. And this next news item is also courtesy of and thanks to the National Veterans Legal Services Program. In May, the National Veterans Legal Services Program and the Veterans Legal Services Clinic at Yale Law School released a research paper that is of particular interest to veterans who served on the island of Guam between 1962 and 1975. According to this research paper by NVLSP and the Yale Law School Veterans Clinic, there's evidence based on their research that should satisfy, although it doesn't yet, it should satisfy the VA's legal standard for recognizing exposure to Agent Orange and other dioxin-containing herbicides that were used on the island of Guam. Now, the conclusion reached by the NVLSP and the Yale Law School Legal Services Clinic is based on exhaustive review conducted over nearly 2 years of government, private, archival, and oral history evidence of herbicide used in Guam during the Vietnam era, again from about 1962 to 1975. According to Bart Stichman, who is the executive director of the National Veterans Legal Services Program, quote, "This white paper confirms the reports of countless veterans who served in Guam but whose claims the VA has wrongly rejected. It is time that the VA acknowledge the strong evidence of toxic herbicide exposure in Guam and care for veterans exposed," unquote. According to John Rowan, the national president of Vietnam Veterans for America, quote, "Like many of the early veterans' Agent Orange claims dismissed by the VA in the 1970s and 1980s, Guam veterans have been fighting for overdue recognition of their in-service disabilities. Guam veterans now have an overwhelming case that will require the VA to finally recognize these meritorious claims," unquote. For the island's role during the Vietnam War, Guam has been called, quote, "the site of the most immense buildup of air power in history," unquote. At the height of bombing operations during Vietnam, three-quarters of all U.S. B-52 aircraft available for operation in Southeast Asia were based in Guam. This rapid U.S. air power buildup in Guam, coupled with the unique climate conditions of the island and acute housing and water shortages, created a pressing need within the island's military leadership to control fire risks and tropical growth with heavy herbicide usage. According to Brian Moyer, a Marine veteran who served in Guam from 1974 to 76 and leads the group Agent Orange Survivors of Guam, which is a section of military veterans advocacy, Mr. Moyer said, and I quote, "Service members have said for years that they sprayed Agent Orange and other toxic herbicides all across Guam. So many of us were exposed, and sadly, Many have already passed away with no recognition from the VA, unquote. According to James Campbell, a law student at Yale's Veterans Legal Services Clinic, and I quote, official government accounts of herbicide mishandling, improper hazardous waste disposal, and high concentrations of dioxin across Guam establish exposure pathways to support claims of service connection based on herbicide exposure. We hope that veterans, advocates, and lawmakers will build on this report to address unremediated health risks and water pollution in Guam, and unquote. Rick, before going over to the, there are always two sides to a story, and the other side is, of course, the VA and the military. Before going out over that, let's go over to you. Any thoughts? I know you you attended in February a conference that talked about this issue.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the, and David, you and I deal with evidence all the time, and one of the most remarkable things that I saw was the demonstrative evidence that the that they produced at the seminar, and that was the pictures. You know, pictures speak a thousand words, and when you see these pictures, it is clear that the landscape was subject to herbicide exposure. And, you know, some of the pictures were extremely alarming. And then, and you have to help me with this one, David, but I remember them talking about the cancer rates in Guam and how high they were.
Right.
And taking how small a country Guam is, and you compare that to the United States, it was alarming. And again, I forget exactly the numbers, but it was jaw dropping for me to hear that.
Right. Well,
you're dealing with
that's a good point. In other words, there is evidence in this seminar that you and I both attended in early February. It was sponsored by the Military Veterans Advocacy Organization. And we've had John Wells, retired Navy commander and now lawyer and one of the finest veterans advocates in the country. He was leading this seminar, but also others within his organization that are specializing in specifically the Guam issue, including Brian Moyer, the Marine who I had quoted earlier. Because within military veterans advocacy, there's also the group, as I said, Agent Orange Survivors of Guam. And the impressive thing to me at the seminar was the really useful evidence in the form of affidavits, maps, and as you said, photographs that helped to document and which could be useful. Now, what we're facing is, despite this research by the National Veterans Legal Services Program and the Yale Law School Legal Services Clinic, despite this paper that was this research paper that was released on May the 11th of this year, you know, the VA is taking a hardline position in opposition to that, and that's what I'll talk about next. And then, Rick, welcome your thoughts and analysis on it. On May 11th, Patricia Keim of the Military Times newspaper published an article that said, and I quote, a 2018 Government Accountability Office concluded that in the absence of records, including those that were incomplete or have been lost, and without credible soil samples, herbicide exposure in Guam could not be conclusively proven or disproven. For veterans who served outside of Vietnam to receive VA disability compensation or health services for the 14 health conditions determined to be linked to herbicide exposure, unless they were in a few areas like the DMZ of Korea, or if they were in certain places in Thailand, or a few very select other locations, they must prove that they had Agent Orange-related illness connected to their military service and provide support for that causal link, that nexus. There have been some veterans who served on Guam who have been awarded disability claims for Agent Orange-related illnesses, for the National Veterans Legal Services Program and Yale Law School Clinic. They believe that all who served on Guam during the Vietnam era period, 62 to 75, who have a presumptive condition, one of the 14 conditions that are already on the Agent Orange list for Vietnam veterans, that they should automatically qualify for VA benefits without having to go find their own expert doctor to make their own individual opinion. Now, the DOD and the VA, they've taken a hardline approach to this. In January, the DOD released a list of locations outside of Vietnam where herbicides were tested or stored. But the list omitted more than 40 previously listed exposure sites. So if you'd been following what was on the Internet prior to January, you would have found that the list was much longer, that the DOD had acknowledged that herbicides had been either tested or used. January of this year, the new list was missing 40 of the previously listed sites. Guam was not included on either list. And in a report on Agent Orange in Guam, the GAO, the Government Accountability Office, again said challenges remain improving its existence on the island. Well, obviously, they are discounting the first-person eyewitness testimony of veterans that were there and swore that they were the ones involved in spraying. So it's an interesting issue that really has great implications for individuals who served there, that were affected by it, that were sickened and perhaps developed a fatal illness, and also affecting their families as well. So it's an issue that is going to continue to receive ongoing attention, whether this research paper issued by NVLSP and the Yale Law School will have any impact. Obviously remains to be seen. The VA has not yet responded to that. Now, there has been legislation offered in Congress in 2017 that would create that presumptive status, but it never made it out of committee, and as of now, in 2020, that idea has not become law. So that's more on the Guam issue with Agent Orange. Rick, let's get back over to you.
Well, it's just one of those, what's that motto we hear all the time by veterans, delay, deny, hope you die? It just seems that that's what's going on here. You know, the government doesn't want it to pay the money to help our disabled veterans for the service to their country while serving on Guam, a place we know that was exposed to herbicide exposure. I don't know what they're looking for in soil samples or any of this other research. I think it's pretty clear that the circumstantial evidence is overwhelming. And again, if you take the benefit of the doubt rule and apply it, I don't know how you can't come up with a positive and favorable result for a veteran who's seeking a disability claim as a result of their exposure to herbicide exposure on Guam. I just don't understand it. But, you know, it's the same old thing. Look how long it took for Congress to take care of the Agent Orange situation, Camp Lejeune situation. I mean, we have the burn pits situation right now that Congress is currently, turning their back on our veterans on and ignoring. And despite all the efforts by all the good people out there trying to get Congress to do the right thing, our politicians are turning their backs on all those veterans out there. So, hey, November's coming up, veterans. This is your time to have to be heard. So, if during the summer and in the fall, when a lot of these incumbent politicians are looking for your vote, sit them down and ask them. Ask them, if you were at Guam and you've got disability issues that you believe are related to your experience at Guam and exposed to herbicide exposure, ask them, where do you stand on that, congressman, senator? What's going on? Make them answer the question. I'm not sure what they're going to tell you, but they'll probably say all the right things. The bottom line is in my opinion, the circumstantial evidence is overwhelmingly in your favor. And, you know, you just got to keep pushing, and maybe one day the light bulb will go off, and they'll get you veterans will get the compensation that you deserve. But in the meantime, many of you are going to die. You Blue Water veterans, you've been through that. Many of you, your brothers died waiting for Blue Water legislation to pass. Many veterans died as a result of waiting for Agent Orange legislation to pass, Camp Lejeune legislation to pass. So hopefully, you know, we can get this thing done, and not many veterans are going to die waiting for the Guam legislation to pass. So I get disgusted, David. Back to you.
Yeah, well, for those that would like more information or those that would like to get involved, either personally or financially support those that are researching and advocating for veterans, in addition to the National Veterans Legal Services Program, NVLSP.org, that we've already mentioned in a couple contexts tonight. Also, go online and go to the organization for Military Veterans Advocacy. They're also on Facebook and other social media, Military Veterans Advocacy. One of the leaders is John Wells. I say he's been on our show a number of times over the last 3 years. The reason I mention that is an organization like Military Veterans Advocacy has proven the impact that a small group of well-informed experts who have the skill and the perseverance can make all the difference. And that's been illustrated by Military Veterans Advocacy being responsible basically for the successful litigation on the Blue Water Navy issue, and then lobbying Congress and lobbying the VA. So organizations like Military Veterans Advocacy, National Veteran Legal Services Program, are the organizations you want to turn to if you want to join organizations that are really effective on these issues. And Military Veterans Advocacy takes a three-pronged approach, as John Wells has explained on some of our prior programs: education, litigation, and legislation. So they educate the public, they educate veterans, they educate members of Congress, they educate other veterans groups, they litigate in the court systems by taking cases and litigating them through appeals. And the legislation is obviously lobbying for favorable statutes passed by Congress, but also by favorable regulations that are enacted by the VA. So check out those organizations on the Internet: National Veteran Legal Services Program, Military Veterans Advocacy, and I think you'll be pleasantly surprised with the wealth of information that they have there. All right, we've got more news. Rick, let me just cover this next one, then I'll turn it back over to you. As we've mentioned on previous programs, during this COVID-19, for a period of time, the VA put compensation and pension C&P exams on hold, basically. And some, they went to telehealth as in a different context than providing care, but the contracted exams for the compensation and pen claims. Well, the VA announced that they're starting to resume these C&P exams in select locations across the country. And the Veteran Administration has contacted medical providers who will begin contacting veterans at these locations around the country. Resuming these C&P exams allows the VA to continue delivering benefits our veterans have earned, according to VA Secretary Robert Wilkie, who also said, and I quote, "We're keeping the safety of veterans and our medical providers as our highest priority and have put a robust set of measures in place to ensure medical providers can safely conduct these examinations," unquote. So these safety measures include COVID-19 screening for veterans and employees, physical distancing, and appropriate personal protection equipment to include face coverings and gloves. These in-person exams are at about a dozen and a half facilities around the country. So if you're a veteran awaiting a C&P exam, you may be contacted soon. Of course, it's all, I think, going to be dependent on if this first wave of COVID-19 cases has dwindled or whether a second phase begins. So stay tuned. All right, Rick, do you have other news for us?
I do. U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs also announced on May 28th that has begun a national four-year study on the impact of COVID-19 on veterans to help address critical questions about the disease, known as EPIC-3, Epidemiology, Immunology, and Clinical Characteristics of COVID-19. Researchers will study data and biospecimens such as throat swabs and blood to learn how the virus that causes COVID-19 has affected veterans. By analyzing data on COVID-19 risk factors, progression, outcomes, immunity, this VA research promises to significantly advance the fight against the disease, said Secretary Robert Wilkie. The study will complement a similar effort by the Department of Defense. The effort is led by VA's Cooperative Studies Program, CSP, and coordinated by the VA's Seattle Epidemiology Research and Information Center, CSP. The epidemiology centers in Durham, North Carolina, West Haven, Connecticut, and Boston are also contributing to the four-year study. The studies involve veterans infected with COVID-19 and those who have recovered or may be at risk but have not been affected by the virus. They are volunteers who are inpatients, outpatients, and residents in VA's community living centers. Each cohort consists of hundreds of veterans. A similar study is being conducted by the Department of Defense involving active duty service members at the end of their respective studies. VA and DOD researchers plan to compare findings from the two study groups. To learn more about the VA research, visit research.va.gov. Now, as of August, or recently, the VA is now postponing these in-person hearings at VA centers. They're also postponing, unless you can do a hearing through your computer, through Zoom, Skype, which you can probably do if you have an attorney. All those hearings are being postponed until right now after August the 1st. I just got notification a few days ago, so I'm in the process of trying to figure out when all of my cases are going to be rescheduled. I am doing, you know, in my office, I do these hearings through my computer linked to the BVA. So any veterans out there, if you're aware that you have a hearing coming up in June or July and you haven't received a notification from the VA and you are represented, you might want to reach out and find out what the status of the hearing of your BVA hearing is going to be. I've not been given any new dates except to say that they're postponed through August the 1st of 2020, which is just going to be more delays. On the other hand, if you're able to have your hearing via Skype from your lawyer's office or your representative's office, or even from your own living room, then the VA will conduct that hearing for you. Otherwise, it's been put off. So that's just the updated news from the BVA. Back to you, David.
Yeah, well, that's a big topic, and you know, with the Board of Veteran Appeals hearings essentially on hold, except for the ones that you've mentioned, which are basically on advocates or the veteran's own personal computer, which, quite frankly, I don't think is widely publicized enough by the VA. It looks like...
And I agree with you, but and let me say this, you know, veterans, if you're listening to this and you have an attorney representing you, reach out to that attorney and let the attorney, maybe the attorney doesn't even know about it. And it's very easy. You can just get in touch with the BVA and let them know that, you know, your attorney does have the ability to access. And it's very, very simple. They send you a link. You click on the link, and then it pops up much like the Zoom, and it lets you know when they're going to come in. And You do a couple little prompts, and the next thing you know, the BVA judge pops up on the lawyer's laptop or a computer screen, and you're off and running. So it's and it's, you know, my clients really enjoy it. You know, they the ones here in Florida, just rather than having to go down to St. Petersburg, and they can come to the lawyer's office, and it's a little more casual, it's a little more relaxed. So yeah, like David, you know, you just said, it's not really promoted or advertised that well, and I think it's terrific. I never want to go back down to St. Pete anymore when I can do it from my office. And I think we get a lot more accomplished. And you know, David, we were also talking at one time about the time limit that the BVA has put on these hearings, and you had mentioned that you were told, you know, you were given a 30-minute time limit.
It's on their website, and it's on their letters, too, that are going out. It wasn't a one-off thing.
When I'm doing them from my office, it's not even brought up. And we every one of my hearings have gone way beyond the 30 minutes because it's so relaxed and so casual. I have to say, it's very casual. We really get into a lot of the issues, and the judges, you know, they're terrific. They want to try to get as much resolve for the veteran as they can.
I have to wonder if you're basically lucking out for the fact that these judges right now have basically no hearings. They're not doing the video hearings with the regional office, so the only hearings they're doing are the relatively few video hearings with advocates at their private offices, and therefore they have, you know, they have more time to basically kill. Because my prediction is, once the floodgates open again in August or whenever, and they start doing these hearings, and these judges now are faced with making up the backlog of 4 months of the lack of regional office video hearings, because the last several hearings I had before the COVID-19, which were at the St. Petersburg regional office, and they were by the video conference, you know, where, as we know, the representative and the veteran and any witnesses are sitting in conference rooms watching the judges in Washington, D.C. on a large video screen, and vice versa, the judges was watching and listening via camera. Those are the ones where, like I say, the notification letters were changed to say, you got 30 minutes, and it also showed up on their website. So I and the judges were very tough on that. So my personal view is, when you're only given 30 minutes, and also at least some of the judges, just their own philosophical approach, what you can cover and what really you don't have time to cover in 30 minutes, is I become more of a skeptic about the need for hearings at all, and to go to either of the other two Board of Veteran Appeals lanes, which is under the current, you know, the VA Appeals Modernization Act. When you have a VA decision you're not happy with, when it's an initial decision, you've got three lanes to choose from: supplemental claim, higher level review, and the third lane is the Board of Veterans Appeals. But even that lane has its own three parts. You can either ask for a direct review, where you don't submit any additional evidence. The judge will decide simply what's in the record from up until the point of the adverse decision. In other words, if you keep submitting things, the judge will not consider that. That's not part of their decision. They will only consider the evidence of record as of the unfavorable VA decision. But that's the direct review lane. The second lane is the evidence submission lane, where you're not asking for a hearing, any type of hearing, no hearing at all, but you do want to choose additional information, evidence, whether that's, you know, a written statement from the veteran, medical evidence, a medical opinion, what have you. But the downside with that is you only have 90 days from when you file that notice of disagreement to submit any additional evidence. Now, if you are careful with timing, that 90-day period of time may not be that big of a hindrance if you've waited, strategically waited, to file your notice of disagreement to the very last moment that you can. But that's something you really need to consider, because in a lot of cases, you may want to submit something, whether it's a legal memo or a statement or evidence, and that's where the evidence submission lane is useful. Now, if you want a hearing, whether it's a video conference, and in fact, I think that's all you're going to get now is a video conference, unless you go up to Washington, D.C. is a video conference. Either you go to the regional office and you're in front of a screen, or as Rick, as you've described, which is the virtual one on a personal computer. But the strict rule that is a big change from the old law is that if you ask for a hearing, the evidence of record is going to be the evidence in the file up until the point of the adverse decision, and only the evidence that is submitted either at the hearing or within 90 days after the hearing. And this is really, I don't know why they've done this, but whether their reason is makes sense or not really doesn't matter. In other words, you've only got at the hearing or 90 days after. If you submit evidence after your notice of disagreement, but before the hearing itself, they will not consider that. They will just pretend it doesn't exist. Now, maybe some judge will give you the benefit of the doubt and ignore their own rule, but that's not what the rule is now. And you're going to find some judges that are sticklers, and which will explain why you end up getting some BVA decisions that didn't consider stuff that was sent in, and that's because, you know, you've got there's these three lanes now, each with their own unique rules about the timing of when you can submit stuff. But anyway, complicated stuff, needlessly complicated, but that's what we have, what we have to work with. So we're about out of time, Rick. Let's go back over to you, and then you can add our Coaching Into Care promotion.
All good stuff, all good information tonight, David. All good information, and as we normally do, we close with our Coaching Into Care program. This program helps veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life. Returning home can be a tough adjustment. Loved ones can help. Coaching Into Care offers free coaching to help you help your veteran. Give this program a call at 1-888-823-7458. Its hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Again, that Coaching the Care number is 1-888-823-7458. Let's help our veterans help themselves become independent and live some nice life outside the military. In addition, I'd like to once again remind veterans that if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in a crisis of any kind, the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs also has the Veterans Crisis Line to help you. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Many veterans have committed suicide because they did not get the help they needed. Help them get the care they need to cope with their problems. Once again, Veterans Crisis Line number is 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Back to you, David.
Thanks. Well, as I said at the beginning, near the beginning of the show, some of our guests in the upcoming weeks include next week Mike Hogan of the organization Pause for Purple Hearts. You can check out their website, pauseforpurplehearts.org. It's an organization that provides free service dogs to veterans suffering from PTSD. He'll be our guest on June the 22nd. Perhaps on July 29th we'll get Ken Rich, who originally was going to be with us tonight. Let's hope so. And then on July the 6th we have the executive director of an organization called Veterans Florida, which is a major veteran organization in the great state of Florida, and his name is Joe Marino. He'll be sharing with us the many programs, projects that his organization has for veterans. Before we close, I do want to make a pitch, an offer to our listeners, that if you're interested or you know a veterans organization or an individual that would be interested in being an advertiser or a sponsor on our program, the Veterans News Hour here on BBS Radio Station 1, we certainly welcome that opportunity to work with you. If you to sponsor or help to sponsor our program, we try to provide timely and informative programs every week on issues to veterans across the country, and you can help us do that by becoming a sponsor or advertiser. So to contact us, our phone numbers and emails are on our show's website, which is bbsradio.com/theveteransnewshour. You can also reach me at area code 813-662-0760. Again, 813-662-0760. And reach out to us. We'd be pleased if you chose to help sponsor or advertise on our program. We've been here with on BBS Radio for going on to 3.5 years. It's been a great experience. We hope to be here on BBS for a long time, but we do welcome sponsors so we can expand our listening audience and continue to bring quality programs to our listeners. I'd like to thank all of you for listening. I'd like to thank our producer at BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom, and we hope you'll tune in next week, same time and station, which is 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central, 5 p.m. Mountain Time, and 4 p.m. Pacific Time, bbsradio.com, Station 1. Until then, we hope you have a great week. Stay safe and stay healthy.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on bbsradio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.